I want to start today with a little visualization exercise. So, wherever you are, unless you're driving, please don't do this if you're driving, just close your eyes for a second. I want you to picture your absolute dream vacation.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
You are somewhere in the Mediterranean, maybe a Greek island, the coast of Spain, Italy. The sun is blazing. I mean, it is genuinely hot, and the sky is just that impossible deep shade of blue. And you're standing on the edge of a crystal clear pool, looking out over the ocean. You've got a cold drink in your hand. You can feel the condensation dripping down the glass.
I am there. It sounds absolutely
It feels
perfect.
like paradise, right?
Total paradise.
Okay, now freeze that image
I
because I'm about to ruin it for you.
had a feeling there was a catch coming.
That pool in the middle of a scorching July in a region that has been, historically water scarce since the Roman era. That pool is part of a massive invisible crisis.
Right.
The very industry that drives the economy there, tourism, is, well, it's effectively drinking the Mediterranean dry.
It's the classic paradox of the region, isn't it? You have millions of people flocking to these specific
Right
spots.
when the water is lowest.
Exactly. Just when the natural water supply is at its absolute bottom. It's a collision course.
And that is exactly what we are unpacking today. We're diving into a really fascinating and frankly quite urgent piece of work. It's called the Blue Horizons Catalog.
It's from the Interreg Euromed Akamaman project.
Yes. And look, I have to get this out of the way immediately. I checked the credits. Jason Momoa sadly is not involved.
Which is a huge missed marketing opportunity, honestly.
Massive. But the actual team behind this is pretty heavy hitting. We're talking about the National Technical University of Athens, the El Legado Andalusi Foundation in Spain,
Plus partners from France, Italy, Malta, Portugal, the whole region.
and this isn't just some dry white paper. They describe it as a comprehensive repository.
Or a toolkit. I think that's a better way to think of it.
Yeah, a toolkit, a survival manual for coastal cities. The whole mission here is to figure out how to take a region under severe pressure from climate change and mass tourism and stop it from acting like a
A
drain.
drain.
That's the term they use.
Well, it makes sense. Think about how we currently operate. It's a linear system. We pump water out of the ground. We use it once for a shower or a pool. We pollute it.
And then throw it away.
Right. We treat it, maybe, and dump it in the sea. It's a one-way street. The whole goal of Blue Horizons is to turn that linear drain into a circular system.
And some of the solutions in here are just wild. They range from incredibly high-tech stuff, like machines that literally pull water out of the air.
The things that feel like they belong in an Indiana Jones movie.
Exactly. It's a mix of forgotten history and future tech.
So where do we start?
So let's get into the hardware first. The report kicks off with something called nature-based and hybrid interventions, which to me sounds a bit like marketing speak for, we're going to plant some trees and hope for the best, but it's more complex, right?
Oh, much more complex. It's about using nature as infrastructure. Instead of building a concrete factory to do a job, you build an ecosystem to do it for you.
Okay.
And the standout example in the report for me was the constructed wetlands, specifically something called subsurface flow constructed wetlands.
Okay, hold on. Let's pause there. Constructed wetland. If I'm a hotel owner in, say, Mykonos or Ibiza, and you come to me and say, I want to put a wetland next to my luxury suites, I'm hearing swamp. I'm hearing bad smells, and I'm hearing mosquitoes eating my guests alive. That has to be a hard sell.
And that is the exact reaction most people have. It's the biggest barrier to getting these things built, which is why the subsurface flow part is the absolute critical detail here.
So how did that work?
So in a traditional wetland, a natural swamp, you have standing water on the surface. That's where the bugs breed. That's where the odors come from.
Right.
In a subsurface flow system, the wastewater flows through a bed of gravel and sand underground. It never, ever touches the air.
So you don't actually see the sewage.
You don't see it, and more importantly, you don't smell it. On the surface, it just looks like a garden. You have reeds, cattails, maybe some flowering plants, and their roots reach down into that flow.
And they clean the water.
They do, along with all the microbes living on the gravel. They just break down all the pollutants. It's basically a sewage treatment plant disguised as a flower bed.
That is clever. And for that hotel owner, is it expensive?
That's the best part. The report highlights the CapEx, the capital expenditure, is between 80 and 200 euros per square meter.
Which, compared to a standard concrete treatment plant,
Is significantly cheaper to build. But the real savings, the long-term win, is in the operational costs.
yeah.
A standard plant needs electricity 247 for pumps aerators. It needs chemicals, skilled engineers.
And a wetland.
It just sits there. It uses gravity and biology. Nature doesn't charge an hourly rate.
I like that. Okay, so that handles the dirty water going out. What about the water coming in? The report talks a lot about rainwater harvesting, which, again, feels a bit basic. Are we just talking about putting buckets under gutters?
It's a little more sophisticated than that. They talk about systems like filter drains and bioswales. Imagine a shallow, sort of grassy ditch that runs along the edge of a property.
Okay.
It catches rainwater, filters it through the soil layers, and channels it into underground tanks. And it's all done with gravity.
No pumps.
No pumps. And this solves two problems at once. First, you get free water for flushing toilets or irrigation. I mean, we currently use drinking quality water to flush toilets.
Which, when you actually say it out loud, is completely insane.
It's incredibly wasteful. But second, think about what usually happens when it rains hard in these towns. The ground is baked dry or paved over. The water doesn't soak in, it just floods.
And washes all the gunk from the streets into the sea.
Exactly. Oil, trash, everything. These bioswales, they capture that runoff and let it soak slowly back into the ground, refilling the aquifer. It's basically using the landscape as a sponge.
Okay, so wetlands and sponges, that's the low-tech, earthy stuff. But you promised me sci-fi. I saw something in the notes about a project called Remedies and a machine called H2 Oasis.
Yes. This is the other end of the spectrum. H2 Oasis is an atmospheric water generator.
So a fancy dehumidifier?
A dehumidifier on steroids. You plug it in, it sucks in air, cools it down to condense the moisture, filters it, and out comes pure drinkable water.
Wow.
The report says it works best when humidity is over 30%, which for a coastal island is, you know, pretty standard.
That sounds like a magic bullet. Why doesn't every single hotel have one? If I'm on a Greek island with no water, why don't I just buy 10 of these things?
Well, there's no such thing as a free lunch in physics. The trade-off is energy. Those wetlands we just talked about. Totally passive. Zero energy. This machine needs a stable power source.
So if you're on a remote island running a diesel generator to power your water maker...
You're just solving one problem by making the climate problem worse. It's a vicious cycle. The report is very clear that this technology really only makes sense when it's paired with renewables, like solar panels.
But for a remote spot with no other option?
It represents total independence.
Speaking of remote locations... Let's talk about plastic. You can't discuss the Mediterranean without acknowledging the plastic pollution crisis. It's everywhere.
It's just huge. The Med is practically a plastic soup in some areas.
And the report brings up a case study from the Kerkenna Islands in Tunisia that I found really powerful.
It's a great story. So Kerkenna is beautiful, but it's isolated. They were almost entirely reliant on bottled water shipped over from the mainland.
Just think about the logistics of that for a second. Ferries loaded with pallets of plastic bottles, burning fuel to get there, people drink them.
Yeah.
And then what happens to the empties?
They just pile up. And on an island, waste management is a nightmare. There's nowhere for it to go. So the No More Plastic Initiative decided to cut the supply chain right at the source. They installed reverse osmosis R units directly in the schools.
Providing tap water that's actually safe to drink.
Safe, clean water for over 2,600 pupils and staff. But, and this is the genius part, they didn't just install the taps and walk away, because habits are hard to break. If you've been told your whole life that tap water is bad for you,
you won't just start drinking it.
Of course not. So they distributed 1,000 stainless steel reusable bottles to the kids. They made it cool. They made it a status symbol to have your own bottle.
And that changes the culture. Those kids go home and tell their parents, hey, we don't need to buy the plastic stuff anymore.
It's a perfect example of a local solution solving a huge global problem.
From the future of plastic-free schools, I want to go back to the past. Because there's another project in here called Alter Aqua, and this is the one that gave me those Indiana Jones vibes.
Yes. This is one of my favorite parts of the whole catalog.
They're basically going into these old cities and finding ancient, abandoned infrastructure, right?
Exactly. We tend to forget that people lived and thrived in the Mediterranean for thousands of years before modern plumbing. They knew how to survive a drought. They built these massive stone cisterns, underground reservoirs, to catch every drop of winter rain.
And then we just forgot they were there.
We got lazy. Centralized plumbing arrived. We started piping water from distant dams. And we literally paved over these cisterns. Some were turned into trash dumps. Others just sealed up. The Alter Aqua project is going in and restoring them.
It's literally back to the future.
And it makes so much sense. Restoring an existing hole in the ground is so much cheaper than building a new dam. and it preserves cultural heritage at the same time.
There's a similar feel to the Chadwick Lake's rehabilitation in Malta, isn't there?
Yes. That was all about undoing damage. They removed invasive species, fixed these old 19th century dams that had crumbled, and just by letting the ecosystem function naturally again, they increased the aquifer recharge. It's about admitting that maybe we don't need to conquer nature, we just need to stop breaking it.
Okay, so we've got the hardware, the wetlands, the cisterns, the sci-fi machines. Now I want to move to the brain of the operation. The report has a section on holistic resource management, and it uses an acronym that I absolutely hate.
Let me guess.
W-E-F-E.
W-E-F-E.
Yeah.
Sounds like a sneeze. Or a tiny dog barking. It's not the sexiest marketing term, I'll give you that. It stands for water, energy, food, ecosystems.
Bless you. But jokes aside, the concept behind the clumsy name is actually really important.
It's profound. The idea is that you cannot manage water in a vacuum. In the past, a water engineer would just say, I need to get water to this hotel, so they pump it. But they ignore that pumping it uses massive amounts of energy.
And that draining the source might kill the local ecosystem.
And taking that water might deprive a local farm of irrigation, which impacts food. You fix one problem and accidentally create three new ones. It's like squeezing a balloon.
Exactly.
WEFE is about seeing the whole web. And the SureNexus project is the case study that really brings this to life. They piloted a circular tourism water agriculture system.
Okay, let's walk through this loop because this is where it gets really cool. Let's start with the tourist at the hotel.
Okay, so the hotel collects rainwater to flush the toilets. That's step one. Then the wastewater from the hotel, everything that goes down the drain, doesn't go to the ocean. It goes to one of those constructed wetlands.
The flower bed sewage plant.
Right. That treats the water. Now, that water isn't drinkable, but it is rich in nutrients and perfect for irrigation. So it gets piped to a local farm.
Step three, the farm gets water.
The farm grows organic vegetables. And then here's the brilliant part, closing the loop. Who buys those vegetables?
The hotel.
The hotel. So the tourist flushes the toilet, which waters the tomatoes, which they then eat in their salad the next day.
When you put it like that, it sounds a little unsettling. I mean, eating the result of your own flush.
Biologically, it's perfectly sound. It's how the planet works. The Earth is a closed loop. We're the ones who broke the cycle. This just restores it. It shifts us from a linear take, make, waste economy to a circular one.
And that seems critical.
For tourism in the Med to survive the next 50 years, this isn't optional. It's mandatory.
So here's the million-dollar question. If we have the technology, the wetlands, the cisterns, and we have the logic, the circular model, why isn't everyone doing this? Why do I still see hotels watering their lawns with fresh water in the middle of the day?
And that brings us to the software part of the report, the behavior and the policy. You can have the best hardware in the world, but if people don't use it, it's just junk.
The report highlights a solution from Portugal called the AQUA Plus certification. I thought this was brilliant because everyone understands a good rating system, like on your fridge, right?
Exactly. A plus down to F. You look for the green sticker.
This is that, but for water use in buildings?
It's such a simple tool, but it exposes the truth. It rates the infrastructure of the building. Does it have low slow taps? Does it harvest rainwater? Does it recycle gray water?
And what I like is that it rates the building, not the user. So even if I take a long shower, an A-plus building is still more efficient than an F building.
And for the building owner, it's an audit tool. It shows them exactly where they are literally losing money down the drain. It turns water conservation from a moral plea, please save water, into a financial decision.
But knowing you're losing money is one thing. Actually caring enough to change is another. And this is where the smart benchmarking study from the Canary Islands comes in. This is basically psychological warfare.
It's classic nudge theory. They set up a dashboard for hotels, but it didn't just show them their own water usage. It showed them their usage compared to their neighbors.
Hey, look at the hotel across the street. They're using 20% less water than you are.
And hoteliers are competitive people. If you tell a manager they're performing worse than their rival, they don't just shrug. They get motivated. It drives change without the government having to pass a single new law.
Peer pressure. It works.
It really does.
But sometimes you need more than a nudge. You need cold, hard cash. You can't shame someone into buying a new wastewater plant if they're broke.
True. And that's where the Andalusia grant comes in. The report details a 40 million euro funding program for the next generation EU recovery instrument.
That is a serious chunk of change.
It is. and it's targeted. It pays for things like water reuse in pools, smart meters, green roofs. It proves that policy needs to be backed by capital. You can't just tell businesses to be green. You have to lower the barrier to entry.
So we have the tech, we have the psychology, and we have the money. What's left? What's the final boss in this video game?
The rules of the game itself. Governance. The Blue Horizons report is surprisingly blunt about this. It talks about fragmented governance and regulatory mismatches.
Which is a polite way of saying the laws are a complete mess.
A total mess. In some cases, it is actually illegal to do the right thing.
Give me an example of that.
Well, in some places, the health codes just haven't caught up with the technology. So reusing treated wastewater for, say, flushing toilets might be technically banned, even if the water is perfectly clean. The law assumes wastewater equals poison, because the law was written in 1950.
That's incredibly frustrating. You have the solution, but the rule book says no.
It is. And the report points to the ISAS Plus project as a way forward. They produced a white paper called Towards a Zero Impact Island. The goal is reducing dependence on the mainland through decentralized treatment.
Decentralized meaning dealing with your own mess on your own island.
Exactly. Instead of piping waste miles away or shipping water in, you manage your resources locally. But to do that, you need everyone talking to each other.
Which leads to the engagement platforms they mentioned.
Right. There's one called Nexus Share. It's designed to get the farmers, the hoteliers, the mayors, and the utility companies all in the same room, or at least the same virtual room.
Because right now, the farmer and the hotelier are enemies, right? They're fighting over the same well.
Precisely. If they plan together, they might realize that the hotel's wastewater can be the farmer's irrigation water. They can turn a conflict into a partnership. But that conversation has to actually happen.
You know, it seems like the common thread through all of this, the wetlands, the cisterns, the policies, connection, connecting the waste to the food, the past to the future, connecting the hotelier to the farmer.
That is the perfect synthesis. The Blue Horizons catalog proves that the technology exists. We don't need to wait for some magic invention. We have wetlands, smart meters, reverse osmosis. And the money is starting to flow, like we saw with that Andalusia grant. The final piece of the puzzle is the mindset shift.
Shifting from drain to loop.
We have to stop seeing water as a commodity we buy and consume and start seeing it as a cycle we participate in.
And that mindset shift isn't just for the policymakers. It's for us, too. The listeners, the tourists.
Absolutely.
You know, the report mentions the Save Water Seal in the Algarve. It got me thinking. We are so obsessed with checking the star rating of a hotel. Is it 4 stars? Does it have a nice pool? How's the breakfast?
We read hundreds of reviews for that stuff.
But maybe we need to start checking the water rating.
Imagine if a site like TripAdvisor or Booking.com had a big, prominent water efficiency score right next to the price. An A plus or an F. That would change the industry overnight.
It really would.
Yeah.
If I knew Hotel A was recycling all its water and Hotel B was draining the local aquifer just to keep its lawn green, I know where I'd spend my money.
And that is the power the listener holds. You vote with your wallet.
So that is our challenge to you. The next time you are planning a trip to the Mediterranean or anywhere, really look a little deeper. Don't just look at the photos of the infinity pool. Ask where the water comes from. You might just help save the place you love visiting.
It's a small ripple that can make a very big wave.
Thanks for diving in with us today. Until next time, stay curious.